Chris Jones and the Night Drivers have a brand new album out on Mountain Home Records. The name of the album is Made to Move. Chris Jones is my guest in the second hour of the program today. We're going to go pretty much in detail through that new album. A lot of great new music. So much originated within the band, and they borrow from other sources. Chris Jones, in my opinion, is one of the greatest historians of this music that we all know and love. He's an award-winning singer-songwriter, band leader, journalist, broadcaster, you name it. We're going to have some fun talking to Chris, and I do appreciate the fact that he was available. I'm very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. Been a big fan for a long, long time, Chris Jones. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing fine, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm happy to have you, and for the people listening, they have to know this about Chris Jones. Of course, you are Chris Jones and the Night Drivers is one of the most recognizable bands, I think, in bluegrass. But Chris is, I think, in my opinion, an acclaimed historian of the music that we all listen to. I would say also an acclaimed journalist. You're always writing about the music in a unique way. I think you are certainly an award-winning songwriter and singer and a broadcaster to boot. You're a very busy guy, and I appreciate the fact that you're taking time to talk to the audience about the brand-new album. Just came out on Mountain Home, Made to Move. It's an excellent album. I've been listening to it a lot. You did a good job.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. Yeah, I am busy, but, you know, it's all stuff I enjoy, so
yeah.
I'm just grateful to have a chance to do it.
The new album, by the way, you have a lot of great guests on it. You have a new band member. We can talk about that now and then fold it into the rest if you want to up front. I don't know her. I just spoke to you a minute about even how to pronounce her name, so let's talk about your new banjo player. And she also lends a really nice female voice, I think, into the live show and also into the recording, and then we'll start talking about some of the songs in particular.
Yeah, Gina Close is our new banjo player. She came in replacing Ned Luparecki, and we had met her when we played a show in West Virginia, close to Winchester, Virginia, where she lived. She was with a band called Buds Collective, which was a really good band, and we played a show that they kind of put on, and they opened things up as a house band. So we met her, were really impressed with her playing. At the time, I didn't know that she was available for anything. We didn't know we needed anybody, but those stars aligned, and so it has really worked out beautifully. We've been extremely happy with what she's done, and then of course you always when touring with somebody, you know how things work out in live shows, and that was going really well. But then you never know how things go in the studio, and she really impressed me in the studio. Just her composure and focus and all of that. So we've been ecstatic.
She and I'll tell her this when I see her someplace out on the road. But I think she has a really great touch on the banjo. And we can talk about all kinds of things on banjo. But sometimes I just think there's a touch, and maybe that's involving the taste of what she's playing. But I would describe it as she has a really good touch in what she plays. She contributes an original tune to the album, Last Frost, but I just think she has a really nice touch on the playing. I think you know what I'm trying to get at. Maybe I'm not saying very artful, but I think it's touch is the word I would use.
No, I think that's right. No, I'm glad you picked up on that.
The album I've got is 12 songs. I've got you contributing to or writing 6 of those songs. I think that's probably accurate.
That's right. Yeah, a couple I wrote of my own, and then 4 that I wrote with John Weisberger. We do a lot more co-writing now than we used to, and John wrote an additional 2 with other writers. So I guess between us, we wrote 8 of them.
Well, and John, of course, is a member of the band. Let's get the rest of the band. We know John. I know John very well. Most of the people do. Writes a lot of songs, bass, and sings with you, and also Mark Stoffel, I guess. And that would be the 4 regular members of the band at this point.
Yes, and with the exception of Gina, you know, we've all been playing together for quite some time. Don and I have been playing together for 15 years. Started after he moved to Nashville from Cincinnati area, and then Mark Stoffel is a guy that I've met years ago. He's from Germany originally.
Right.
We were playing there, and he actually filled in with the band years ago before John joined, just on a couple of shows. We've known each other, you know, for a long time, and he's played the band now for going on a decade.
Yeah, I've met Mark, and I remember the story that you guys were touring in Europe and brought him back home with you, I guess is the best way to describe it, and made him part of the band. So you had to sneak him in the luggage compartment. The first tune is All the Ways I'm Gone. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I hear, and I've been listening to the album a lot. The only way I can prepare for these things is just listen and listen and listen. All the Ways I'm Gone, which is you and John Weisberger, a song. There's kind of a chugging rhythm in there that when first go through it, I think of Johnny Rivers in Memphis, Tennessee, a little bit. Does that? It's not the same, but it somehow reminds me of that. And then, of course, it isn't that, but it makes me think of that tune.
I hadn't thought of that, but I suppose you're right. There's a little bit of a boogie-woogie feel up somewhere doing that and some kind of early Bill Monroe kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
A honky-tonk swing, heavy traffic ahead kind of feel.
You mentioned that the honky-tonk swing and the boogie, there's all kinds of music on this album. There's up-tempo. I guess the most up-tempo tune would be Mark's tune, What the Heck, which is the last tune on the album. It's an instrumental. There are nice, even tunes, ballad almost things, and then just some really recognizable there's a waltz, there's all kinds of bluegrass, but you mix up all the tempo really well, which I appreciate as a listener, and I think that the way that they're arranged on the thing just works really well. Also, the second tune, by the way, I love All the Ways I'm Gone. I wasn't trying to connect it to Johnny Rivers, but I just feel that.
Right, right.
So which is not a bad thing to feel. I mean, it's pretty neat. It's a pretty neat chug along rhythm there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Wanderer. The second song, I guess, contains the lyric that contains the lyric that would be made to move the title of the album. It's right buried in within I'm a Wanderer, and you wrote that with Tom Utz. Do I say his name correctly?
Actually, John wrote that with Tom Utz.
Okay.
And Charlie Steffel, a couple of songwriters. In fact, those three wrote two of the songs on the album. They also wrote The Old Bell. And that was a song that I'd never heard before, and they just sent me a demo of it, and I just really loved it. It just was one of those things that was right up my alley, and so I'd say it's kind of a song that sings itself.
It seems to me, as I go through this process of talking to we'll say, road bands, and certainly you are being the Night Drivers, but there's always tunes, whether you overtly mean to or not, there's always tunes about traveling and being on the road and not necessarily driving down the road to the next gig, but there's always songs where you're out and about and going somewhere or wandering either in a personal journey or actually physically traveling somewhere. And you have another one further down that addresses that a little bit. But this is the first tune on the thing that I on the album that I thought, here you are, you're out on the road, you're wandering around, you're leaving, you're going somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think it sort of fits. Yeah, we're all so scattered as a band now. I'm up in Western Canada and Alberta, and John's our only member left back in Nashville, and Mark's in Illinois by way of Germany, and Gina's in Northern Virginia. So, yeah, we're pretty scattered. But, you know, travel is certainly part of what any band that's playing either nationally or internationally does, and so you have to like that to some extent, otherwise you're definitely in the wrong business. And people that really don't like traveling or seeing new places and all that goes with that find that part of the business really difficult to take very quickly, because it can be rigorous. So
and it's also would have to affect. You love the music, but if you don't like the traveling, it's got to reflect a little bit in your performance or your attitude about it. I would think just being a human being at some point would kind of wear on that ability for you to turn it on and do the performing part.
Well, of course. You know, and I've certainly known musicians that really didn't like that or didn't handle it well. They usually don't stay with it very long for that reason.
We were trading emails just for the listeners. I'm talking to Chris Jones. We traded just a few emails, and at the time, the tune on the album that just really caught me was your treatment of Dark Hollow, and I've moved on. I still like that one a lot, but I've moved on to another tune that I would say today is my favorite. But Dark Hollow is, I've never heard it done that way. Now, you may have had, because I know you're a historian, Chris, you may have an acetate of somebody in 1939 doing it this, but I've never, how did this come about? Because it's a really unique treatment.
Well, it was one of those, it was really sort of a harebrained idea of mine. I thought, I don't even know why. I just was thinking about maybe doing a song that was, you know, I've usually have been so focused on originals and then, you know, working up obscure songs, and thought, how about something that's completely ordinary in bluegrass music? A lot of people do, but doing something really different with it. And so that was the thought, and I just kind of heard this, and I was listening to, and you're on the right track with the old recording. I was listening to Clarence Ashley and his Dark Hollow Blues, which is what you're hearing in this song, and I thought, yeah, I wonder if you could combine these. And the Dark Hollow Blues maybe has as much in common with the East Virginia Blues as the Dark Hollow that we know, but it kind of worked, and we just, you know, did it with key change and experimented with it and really liked, you know, how it worked out. So it's been kind of fun to play. So originally we were calling it Dark Hollows because it's like two different dark hollows.
Okay, yeah, got it. Yeah.
But it was sort of legally complicated to call it that, so it's just Dark Hollow.
The for the listener, it goes up just a little over 2 minutes at this different pace, and then it becomes the song that everybody would say, "Oh yeah, that's Dark Hollow." I mean, so you divide it up, and it's really almost two different songs, except that it's not, like you said, but it really fits together well. And I keep thinking, I go back and forth whether I like the slower introductory part or the other part. Just, oh, now we're doing Dark Hollow, but I mean, they fit together well.
No, thanks. We had fun with it and had fun doing it live. I had played this. I brought the CD over to Tom T. Hall last week because we'll talk about this later. But he has the song he wrote on there. I wanted him to hear that. And before he had gotten to listening to the whole thing, he's looking at me and he said, "How did Dark Hollow get to be 5 minutes long?" So I said, "Well, that's because there's more than one of them.
There's two different songs." Yeah, Tom does have a song on here. You always come back to hurting me. By the way, you always, I think, am I wrong on this or just the last couple? Chris, you always have a Tom Hall. And why wouldn't you have a Tom T. Hall? I mean, the last one was Pinto the Wonder Horse, wasn't it? I mean, and if you can get a Tom T. Hall song, wouldn't you always want one on your album?
Oh, well, you know, and we're good friends, but before we were, really, when I was a kid, I was listening to his music and those songs. I've always loved him, and of course, we all know about his bluegrass music connection.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it hasn't really been a deliberate thing, but it has worked out that way.
Well, he should. I mean,
one of those. And when he and Miss Dixie Hall were writing songs together, they tend to always pitch stuff my way, and there was always something I really liked. So.
Oh, there would have to be. What a great combination. And just to me, I'm just a kid from Kentucky. Tom T. Hall is like, you know, when I had him on the show, well, about a year or so before Miss Dixie passed, and I was walking around that whole day like that. That was one of the most exciting days I could have had doing this. And we talked for about an hour, and I got to talk to Tom T. Hall, and I thought, this is incredible. Why would the nicest guy in the world? And we had a fun. She was cutting up with him. They were having a great time. And to me, that still is one of the biggest days of me being involved in this little project. Range Road 53, Chris, I looked it up. It's a road. Either you're headed to home or you're leaving home, but it's a road in Canada.
Yes, this is kind of a first Alberta-themed song. The range roads are the north-south rural roads in Alberta. They're numbered. They're about a mile apart. And at one time, Sally and I were house sitting. I think it was Range Road 63 or 61. But I didn't like the way that sang. So it went with 53, which is not very far away. But it runs, you know, north-south through the, and that's a long, when something runs north-south in Alberta, it's a long road because it's a long province north.
Are you in the song, are you leaving home, or are you going back home? I don't think you're talking about a current, okay, all right.
Yeah, it's going back, but yeah, I understand the question because in the lyrics, it's sort of reflecting on, you know, when he left, you know, thinking about it.
Right.
You know, saying goodbye, and now he's coming back.
I will tell you this, the next, I'm just kind of going to go through these, although I skip around, and feel free to comment on whatever, but an easy way for me to go through this and not keep artists like you forever, because I will do that if I don't have some restraint on myself. I kind of go through it. Raindrops Fell is the next song. To me, Chris, that is one of the most beautiful songs. I mean, it's you're singing about you're singing about people falling in love and that magic moment, and it ties into with the rain. I think the lyric is something like the raindrops fell and was it and we did or something. What's the lyric? Am I missing it? I've listened to it so much.
You and I and raindrops fell.
That's it. Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, thanks a lot. That's I was really happy with the way it turned out in the studio. And of course, you never know when you go to record something how it's going to be. But I was satisfied with that. And it's a little odd in bluegrass music. It's a positive love song.
Well, you know what, though? You recover well because right after it, you're living without them. And you always come back to hurt me. And then you decide. So, yeah, you do that. It's positive. But then you come back right away with all the hurting songs.
Yeah, in bluegrass music, we need at least a 7 or 8 to 1 ratio.
That's good.
Broken heartedness and things like that. So, no, I'm glad to hear you like it.
That's beautiful. It's really pretty. And the words are gorgeous.
I got a nice little shout out to Tim Surratt from Balsam Range, who was the co-producer of the project. He played Dobro on it, and I was just really happy with what he did.
I've been fortunate to get to know Tim. I guess more immediately, more personal through the IBMA board, and I can't say enough good things about Tim. So anything get him involved in. You have a lot of great guests on the albums. I look through Brooke Aldridge sings with you, Megan, I still call her Megan Lynch, but I mean you got her on foot. You got some great guests, and you have a lot of great people contributing to this in the studio. And then I can't wait to see you doing. Are touring around this new album and having these new songs. Because there's so much great song, so many great bits on here. And I can't wait to see Gina playing with the band on the album. I know her vocals, Chris. It must really add a new thing to the live. You can get people in the studio, and you always have great people. But on the road, it must really lend a new thing to the vocals within the band having her there.
Yeah, that's been a really great thing for us because two harmony parts above has always been a natural thing for me because my lead voice is lower than most in bluegrass music, lower than all but Adam Steffi. But it naturally lends itself to two parts being above. And so I've recorded a lot that way, but we weren't really... the way the band was set up, it wasn't easy for us to do that live.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to skip over Living Without. I was making a joke about right after this gorgeous melody and lyrics of this moment when you fall in love in the song, you go right to you've turned away and you've become willing to live without them, and it's like it didn't last very long. You got the happy song, and the very next one you're walking away, but you're okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of meant to be optimistic in a way.
The next song then is the Tom T. Hall song. You always come back to hurting me. So when we had our moment of happiness and the raindrops fell, we go right back to reconciling yourself to the fact that it's over and you're walking away. And then you do Tom's song as you always come back to hurting me. So we're getting back into the pain aspect that you talked about, the ratio of the hurtful songs to the happy ones. So you're trying to catch up in a hurry, I think, right away. But
yeah, exactly. We're allowed 3 minutes of happiness. have to move on. We don't want to overdo that.
That's right. You don't. Go ahead.
So I was going to say there's some interesting history with the Tom T. Hall song. He and Johnny Rodriguez co-wrote that when Johnny was in his band. Before Johnny went out on his own, he was a member of Tom T.'s band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He had come up to him and said, "Oh, I got this song started, but I need some help with it." And Tom T. said he was the only band member who ever had the nerve to ask him to co-write with him. So they did, and ended up being a number one song for Johnny Rodriguez in the early 70s. And I've always liked it, and listen, it was hard to sing. The intervals are kind of hard, but I've kind of gotten used to it, and really love the song.
Well,
Brooke Aldridge stepped in actually last minute. I love Brooke singing, mm-hmm. but Sally was supposed to be singing on it, and we had just had my wife Sally.
Mm-hmm.
We just had some logistics issues that she was having to leave town, and it was it's a long story, but so that didn't work out, and the song had to be recorded the next day. We were just out of time, and so the day before I called Brooke, and she was available to do it, and so it was kind of funny because Darren Vincent sang the tenor part,
right.
And Darren and Sally and I recorded a bunch in that trio formation on recordings, so I thought, well, that was the idea. So Darren was on there, so for people who are used to Darren and Brooke Aldridge, it is Darren and Brooke Aldridge, but it's a different Darren.
It's a different Darren. All right. I knew he was on that, but I didn't leave that. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And then we come right to the Last Frost, which is Gina's instrumental. And I just keep coming back. I was driving around today, Chris, and I kept thinking, Touch. I don't know how else to describe her playing. And this is an instrumental tune, and she just has a wonderful touch and feel to what she's doing. And it's not like a barn burning five string, you know, go get them tune, but it's a really pretty and just a nice sound.
Yeah, it's a neat tune, and she writes a lot of tunes, and this is one that you really just latched onto. And that was the first of any of these that we started performing live on stage shortly after she joined. She taught this to us, and we've been doing that one for a while. The rest of these are kind of new to us, but.
There's two more songs before I want to talk about The Old Bell. Silent Goodbye, again, you're kind of back into the not horribly morose, sad stuff, but, you know, you're saying goodbye, and goodbyes could be great, but I don't think this is a necessarily happy one, but, I mean, it's part of living, so you're back in that.
Yeah, Silent Goodbye is actually the first song that John and I ever wrote together.
Oh, it is?
That's the only one that's kind of a... It's sort of a recut and in some ways remix. It was originally issued on a CD or sort of between record labels and put it out ourselves, and it felt like it sort of fell through the cracks in terms of people's awareness and it was the first one we'd ever written together. Let's kind of redo it, and so that's how that came about.
Well, I hadn't heard it before, and I think I hear a lot of what you've been, never connected on that before, so I'm glad you snuck it back in. Didn't sneak it back in. Put it back on. Sleeping Through the Storm is an obvious the intent of the song, but the words to me, it has a very gospel kind of a feel to it with the way the vocals are, but I can't follow the, it's just my fault, the lyrics of Sleeping Through the Storm. I don't, what's that derived from?
It's derived from story in the New Testament about Jesus and the disciples being out of the water, and this big storm comes up, and the disciples are scared, and they look to Jesus for help, and he's sleeping. And the song's really about fear.
Yeah.
The song's really about fear, and they think, oh, man, how can he be sleeping through this big storm? And so he wakes up and says, hey, what are you worried about? I got this.
Yeah, I
don't know. And so that's the gist of it. And it's a story you don't hear much. I didn't know any other songs that dealt with that.
Nope.
And that's.
I would lie. Now I'm going to have this image in my head of Jesus waking up and saying, hey, I got this. I just.
What are you worried about?
Hey, Jesus has now become Fonzie.
Yeah.
The Old Bell, since our last exchange, The Old Bell has been an absolutely, and I know John wrote this with Tom, and then Charles, is it Steffel? S-T-F-E-L?
Yep, Charles Steffel.
This is a song, I would say, if you go back to the Bible, and I was trying to figure out this where this, the opposite of this concept comes from, and it's in the Bible. It's like, I think it's in Isaiah, but you're going to beat your swords into plowshares. And this song is exactly the opposite concept. That you have this wonderful story about a bell that's being reforged or recast into a weapon.
Yes, it's a great story, and it's fiction in one way, but based on what was really happening in the Civil War at the time. Which was at that time the South was really running low on weapons and ammunition, and they were looking for any kind of metal they could get. And so things like the bells of local towns are being melted down. And Tom Utes, who is one of the writers on the song, is also a Civil War historian. He was involved in this series of CDs that came out called the 1861 Project. And so
with Bruce.
He knows his stuff.
Was that with Bruce Molsky?
No,
different one. Okay, forget that.
He had a lot. I participated in a couple of singing, and John Weisberg co-wrote a lot of songs.
Oh, okay.
Tom co-wrote every song, and anyway, so that is something based on what was going on at that time, it's a powerful image when you think here's this bell that might be the only way for a little town like that to communicate, announce things, and has an important place in the community to melt that down into weapons.
Into a weapon. All of the news in town came by way of this bell. If you listen to the song, every little thing that occurred. By the way, I only just became familiar with Tom. He did that project with Mac Wiseman, Mac were on the show. And first time I ever really got an idea of what was going on in his head. Time chatting with him. But that's a wonderful song, The Old Bell. That really works out well. I like it a lot. The last tune then is the most up-tempo tune, I think, is What the Heck, which is written by Mark. And that's just kind of like, let's just go, let's let her roll, boys. You're just playing up-tempo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought we'd kind of end things with a bang. Sometimes I look at, even though people download, portions of albums now and they juggle them all around, the sequence still matters to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still think of it like a set list, mm-hmm. in a way. And so we're just ending with a bang. It's a neat tune of Mark's, and we have fun, and I just hang on for dear life.
I do. I noticed. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, a guy that we used to play with, Jeremy Garrett.
Oh, yeah.
String Dusters. Mm-hmm. Helped us out on that, and played a wild fiddle break, and so we had fun.
It is, and I appreciate it. I recognize the sequencing. I really do appreciate the fact when artists do that rather than just, here's 12, let's go with that. I do get a feel of how this moves through the 12 songs that you've selected, and I appreciate that. Just as a listener, I'm telling you, I like the fact that you take the time to, I may disagree or someone, but you can tell why each song follows another. If someone asks you why are these, you know why you lined them up this way, which I think just makes it that much more special to me.
Yeah, and I know there's still people like you who listen to beginning to end, and that's important.
All right, so we're talking, I'm going to let you go. I've kept you longer than I had promised. Talking to Chris Jones about the brand new Made to Move album with the Night Drivers on Mountain Home. How long has it been out, Chris?
It just came out on the 10th of February.
Okay.
We had a little album release event at the Station Inn in Nashville, and so it's fresh.
It's fresh. Well, people know how to find you. I'm sure you have a website that's probably tied right into the name of the band.
Yes. Of course, my name is so ordinary that ChrisJones.com was taken years ago. So ChrisJonesGrass.com is the best way to get there.
Okay.
Just put grass at the end of my name. And that'll take you there, and you'll see immediately as you click on the picture of the album, and that'll direct you how to get a hold of a copy.
And they can get copies of music, and they can find out where you're going to be, and I assume you're going to be appearing as this album comes out and is more readily available. You're going to be appearing and doing songs, and people, you probably have your tour scheduler. My long way of saying, they can find out where you're playing.
Yes, all the dates are up there. Okay. And next stop is Jefferson City, Missouri. And,
okay.
Going to be covering most of the country.
Sure. Okay. Hey, man, listen, I really appreciate your time. I've kept you longer than I had promised, and sometimes I just get carried away because these things are so interesting to me, and I know you, and I have known you, and I've met you, but I've never had a chance to just kind of chat and see what's going on to the best that I'm able to, is how you're approaching these things. It's been a blast for me. I appreciate it.
Those are great, Steve. Thank you very much for having me and for taking the time.
All right. Listen, Chris Jones, I'll let you go, man. Go back to your business, and then I'll see you on the road somewhere, I'm certain.
All right. Hope so.
All right. See you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Bye.